Hey, everybody, welcome back to Two Geeks at the Movies. I am your co-host, Chris, and as always, I am joined by my brother and co-host, Rob. What's going on, boy?
Can you put a shirt on, please? Jesus.
I like my nipples out while I'm trying to podcast. That's a weird way to start things.
Yeah.
I'm now thrown off.
How are you?
I'll wear a shirt, but I refuse to wear pants. I'm good. I'm excited. I think this will be a fun movie to talk about.
Yeah.
As we mentioned last week in our top five episode, we're talking about Last Night in Soho, which I kept calling One Night in Soho. And
it's like how I'm wrong. Always calling the good dinosaur the little dinosaur.
I think that's more excusable because... Who gives a shit about that movie?
Yeah, this is a much better movie.
Yeah. Last Night in Soho, just released, I want to say, just last year. If you're listening to this currently, it was last year, 2001. God, I don't even know what year it is. 2021. Directed by Edgar Wright, who obviously we are both big fans of. We've talked about... Let's see, we did a podcast on Scott Pilgrim, I believe.
Yes.
I think that might be the only one that we have sat down and talked about. Did we do Baby Driver?
I'm sure we've talked about Baby Driver, and I'm sure that Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead have come up in conversation.
Yeah.
But I don't think we've done episodes exclusively about them.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Edgar Wright. In fact, I mean, I was looking through his filmography, and he's done a lot of television before he was kind of famous, and he's done a lot of short films and other stuff. But as far as his major release movies, he hasn't done a ton of them, but I was glad to see that I'd seen all of them now that I've seen this one. He's very watchable.
He did a show called Spaced. Before he ever made movies, and it had Simon Pegg and I believe Nick Frost, and it's, if you can get a hold of it, I don't know where you can find it, but it's a pretty great show, and it's just cool to see some of the camera work and different humor and stuff that he does in his movies now, and you see, oh, he's been doing that since the start.
Yeah. I wanted to say, I was trying to classify this as Edgar Wright doing a horror movie, which seemed like a new thing for me. And then it dawned on me that, no, Shaun of the Dead was Edgar Wright doing a horror movie. So it was made a lot more sense to me than.
He watching Shaun of the Dead, you understand, like, oh, this guy loves horror movies.
Uh-huh.
But Shaun of the Dead is very much a comedy.
Yeah.
This is more of a dramatic horror movie. It's hard to classify what this movie is. It's kind of a thriller, it's kind of horror.
Yeah.
A little bit fantasy to a certain extent.
Right. It's got some Sixth Sense elements to it.
Yeah.
Reminded me a lot of The Sixth Sense, because I have a hard time calling that a horror movie either.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I have a hard time saying what in the world it is. But I like looking at Edgar Wright's filmography, just a detour on him for a minute. I like that he is willing and able to do different things, because I think it's very easy for directors in Hollywood, when they hit on something big like he did with Shaun of the Dead, to sort of be pigeonholed into that. Mm-hmm. And he's done a nice job doing different things, because again, Hot Fuzz is sort of his, you know, cop movie, and Baby Driver is his heist movie. Scott Pilgrim is whatever in the world that is. That's his version of a comic book movie. It's funny that he almost did Ant-Man.
Yeah.
And I saw that, I don't know how solid this is, but on IMDb, it was announced that his next movie is going to be The Running Man.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it's what it says there. And I thought, okay, maybe this is something.
Like a remake?
Well, I thought for sure this had to be just a title that he was using for something else that he was doing. And I clicked on it, and the description says the futuristic United States of 2025, when the world has become a dystopia, and writers is credited Stephen King for the novel. So apparently it is what, I don't know if it's going to be a straight remake of the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, or if it's going to be closer to whatever Stephen King's version of it is, or, you know, with Edgar Wright, it could go completely something else. But I thought that was real fun to see.
That's ballsy, because how do you one-up Paul Michael Glazer? Especially without Richard Dawson being a part of the production.
Yeah. Is it going to be Drew Carey? Or, Steve Harvey? Evil Steve Harvey. Oh, man.
I would actually watch that movie.
You know what would be fun is if they brought Arnold Schwarzenegger in to play that character.
Oh, God. That would be crazy.
That might be fun. So, anyway, Edgar Wright. I still lament the fact that he didn't get to do Ant-Man. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't know how that would have... I don't know if he could have done what he did. I feel like it could have ended up like a solo situation where they were like, oh, let's turn him loose and see what he does. And then they look at like the finished work halfway through and be like, this is not fitting into what we do. Right. I mean, you'd have a better chance of that with Marvel than anything, but they have their sort of way to do things, and I think he would have really struggled with that.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, because he's very much his own thing, and I think he would have gotten very frustrated with how they wanted him to do it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about last night in Soho.
Right.
First off, did you enjoy it? What's your initial reaction?
So I like this movie quite a bit. This was my second time watching it.
Okay.
And I liked it more this second time. Mm-hmm. I had little issues that we'll get into as I was watching it the first time, but the second time I was able to enjoy it a lot more, just because I kind of threw my hands up and was like, I don't really care. Uh-huh. And I picked up on a lot more of kind of just at least how he was filming it, what he was doing. And I like it quite a bit.
Good.
Yeah. What about you?
I liked it very much. I would say it was maybe upper middle pack of things that he's done. I like Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz more. I really did like Baby Driver a lot. I think this is maybe on par with that. I think it's better than World's End. And I would even say I enjoyed it maybe even a little bit more than Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
Which I still enjoy, but it's...
He hasn't made a movie that I don't like.
Yeah. Yeah. I like everything that he's done.
Yeah.
I know movies don't always have to say something. And I don't know that all of his movies don't necessarily really have a morality tale, or, you know, they're, sometimes it's just fun. Mm-hmm. But I felt like this movie was trying to say something. And then I think it kind of, maybe the message got muddled a little bit towards the end.
It undercuts itself to a certain extent.
It does. And so I wasn't able to reconcile the ending as well as I would have liked. But it's nonetheless a fantastically fun movie. And even, I mean, if you watch it just for the story, it's fun. And if you watch it, like you said, from like a filmmaker's aspect, where you're just looking at what he's doing with the mirrors and what he's doing with the shots where the two leads are sort of like switching in and out, like in the middle of shots. It's mind blowing how they put it all together. Really, yes. Really fun to see how it all worked.
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend, there's not many people that I wouldn't recommend this movie to, because I think there's a little something for everybody here.
Okay.
Because we talked about how, to a certain extent, you can classify it as a horror movie. But if you don't like horror movies, I think you can still watch this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, it's got some kind of creepier moments, but it's also just sort of a thriller and sort of exciting and a mystery. It's just, it's fun. And
yeah,
and the way he films kind of the world of the, it's the 60s, right?
It is, yeah, 60s London.
Particularly when they're in like the clubs and stuff, it's mm-hmm. it's very cool to see.
Yeah. Well, should we get into spoilers about what it is exactly?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard not to. This would be a hard movie because it did not make money. I looked it up. It was a budget of $43 million.
Okay.
And it only made $23 million worldwide. So
it
did not do well. But the fact that you and I can't quite classify like where we would put this on the blockbuster shelf in terms of genre, and then also advertising it without spoiling what's going on and what the basically the hook of the movie is, handicaps it in terms of getting people to go watch it.
Yeah. And it's so hard. Like, I mean, on top of everything else, you had COVID where people weren't going to the theaters, and that didn't do it any favors. And just the way that we watch movies and the way that people take these things in anymore, you almost had to sell this strictly on the fact that it was an Edgar Wright movie. And while that isn't works,
enough for most people.
Yeah, most people probably couldn't tell you who that was unless you, like, if you said Edgar Wright and listed, like, five other things he'd done, then they might be like, oh, okay, well, I saw one of those and I liked it, or my college roommate really loved Shaun of the Dead, maybe I'll check this thing out. But, yeah, it's a hard thing to sell. And like you said, the advertising was so tough to even figure it out. I mean, I saw the trailer for it, and I knew him. I knew what was coming, and even I had a hard time kind of deciding: is this supposed to be just like a fun little adventure, or is it scary? Like, I couldn't even quite figure it out. I was on board, but again, I always think of my wife, who's a tough sell on any of these things, and there was no way I could have ever got her to watch this. And even watching it, I think she would have made it halfway through and thrown her hands up and been like, I don't understand for a minute what's going on here. So, and it's a bummer. We talked a little bit last week about Brad Bird when we were talking about homages to time periods. And I keep thinking about him when I see movies like this and what happened with Tomorrowland, which was not a good movie, but it was also, it was a movie that Disney took a flyer on in a time when they were only pumping money into Marvel and Star Wars and Pixar and things that people knew from brand recognition. And they said, okay, we'll try it. And it was an original movie. It bombed hard, and it set original movies back, like big budget original movies back for years to come. This is one of the few that I've seen in recent years that is something that was just unrecognizable that they tried to sell. And again, it sucks that it did not sell well.
Yeah. It's one more example of why big studios aren't going to take a gamble on something like this.
Yeah. Well, let's say from here on out, we're talking spoilers for what this movie is and what it's about. Briefly, I guess it involves a young lady who, what was the current time of this? Is it present day or was it?
Yeah, I think it's present day.
Okay, so we'll say present day. A young lady played by, I'm probably going to mispronounce her name. Is it Thomason McKenzie?
I thought it was Thomason.
Thomason or Thomason McKenzie, who was in the fun Nazi movie.
Jojo Rabbit.
Jojo Rabbit, thank you, which is another fantastic movie if you get a chance to see it. But she plays a young lady who lives in sort of a rural or, you know, small town area in England who goes to go to London to study fashion. And she is sort of obsessed with 1960s London and gets pulled into this kind of a dream world, kind of fantasy world, where she's almost inhabiting the body of a lady who was alive in the 60s, played by Anya Taylor-Joy. Mm-hmm. And again, it starts out as her just loving this era and being just completely enamored with it, and devolves into sort of the realities of what this lady was going through, and becomes much, much darker than it looks like it's going to at the start.
Yeah. And they never, I am very sorry. So she moves to London, to mm-hmm. Soho, the neighborhood. I don't know if you would call it a neighborhood. It's almost like a bureau from or a borough from New York City.
Yeah.
And she rents this apartment, and that's when she starts having these sort of, she'll go to sleep, and yeah, she, like you said, inhabits essentially this woman's body, but she's basically seeing what happened through her eyes.
Yeah.
And they never really explain, other than we'll get into the ending later, but they never really explain how it works. It's not like Back to the Future where they say, okay, this is how the science of this happens. Well, you just have to sort of go with it.
Because she's in this apartment where the other lady had lived. I got to get their names because, so it's Sandy, Anya Taylor-Joy, it plays Sandy, who is the lady from the past. And Eloise is Thomasin McKenzie. So Eloise is living in this apartment where Sandy had lived in the 60s. But they also hint at Eloise having this almost otherworldly connection to her mother who had passed away. Where she will see her. But that's one of the issues I had with the movie is they present this at the start, that she sees her mother's ghost or her spirit or whatever you would call it in a mirror. And there's this idea that she can feel her presence. And Eloise has a discussion with her grandmother. So it's acknowledged right away that she has this, I don't know if it's an ability to communicate with the dead. And that's why she was special. And that's why this happened to her. But until the very end, I don't think the mother comes up again or there's much other mention of it. And it was one of those things that you think is going to come back into play, and it doesn't, except in just the thinnest of threads connecting her to what's going on in the movie.
I mean until you mentioned it, I kind of forgot her mom involved at all in the plot.
Right. Because that's how unimportant it is, which I thought was very strange. I can't remember the concept, what they call it, about if you show a gun in one scene, then you have to use it later.
Oh, Chekhov's gun.
Chekhov's gun. Thank you. There it is. And that's just sort of that idea in movies that if you set something up, you have to pay it off. And I thought that setup came so early in the movie and so seemingly important to be almost forgotten. To the point that you didn't even remember it,
right.
was one of the weaker things in the movie. Again, doesn't wreck it by any means, but it was curious.
So. Agreed.
Yeah.
I may be making this up, but I feel like I read about this that, right. I mean, not fully, but had some inspiration behind some of the things in this from, Suspiria.
Okay.
Which not the remake, but the original, which is an Italian horror movie. And that's about a young woman moving to the city to join a dance theater. Mm-hmm. And it has a lot of similarities in terms of this kind of bright-eyed young woman coming and sort of entering a nightmarish world that she wasn't anticipating. And a lot of play with just like very bright colors in sort of a darker world. So if you enjoy this movie and you're willing to watch an old Italian horror movie, I think it's worth going and checking out. Dario Argento, I think, was the director. But
did you see the remake of Suspiria?
I did. And is it
any good?
Yeah, I actually really liked it. It's pretty different from the original, but they're both just batshit crazy. If you watch either of them, you have to be in a certain mood. Genie would not like them. Your wife would not like them.
Not a chance.
Yeah.
So the performances by the two leads, by Eloise and Sandy, unbelievably good.
Amazing.
So good. That Thomasin McKenzie is going to be huge. And obviously last year, everybody fell in love with Anya Taylor-Joy from The Queen's Gambit. Mm-hmm. And she's fantastic. But boy, both of them just are unbelievably good. And it's really nice to see just two strong female leads who are also so different from each other. I mean, they both have very distinctive personalities. They're not just, you know, the pretty girl who's there to hang on the guy's arm. I mean, they just have very, very distinct personalities, and they do such a wonderful job. And then you got old Diana Rigg in there who just kicks ass.
Yeah. This is her last role before she passed away.
It is. I know. It's so sad. And, you know, again, not to spoil, but how she behaves at the end where she's sort of storming around and like physically kicking ass. I was like, man, she's like, I mean, I knew that she had passed away not too long after this. But even at that moment in the movie, I'm like, yeah, she's still sort of a physical presence for being just a little fire plug of a woman at that point.
And I like that for an actress who had been in so many things for so long, that her last role, like we were saying, not everybody knows who Edgar Wright is. There's a lot of film nerds who would go see anything that he makes. But Diana Rigg was like, yeah, I'll make this weird little horror movie with this random British director that I don't know. I love Diana Rigg.
Yeah, it was really fun to see her. Okay, let's talk about Matt's. You have something.
Yeah, just before we go on, Thomasin McKenzie, I love Anya Taylor-Joy from The Witch, Queen's Gambit. I'm totally spacing on something, but she's always so good. I know she's going to play a young Furiosa in the next Mad Max movie.
Yeah, that's interesting for sure.
Which I think will be Mad Max-less. But she's so great that I was kind of going into this thinking like, oh, this is her movie. But Thomasin McKenzie is so awesome in this. Yeah, I hope she has a big career for sure. Yeah,
she is unbelievable.
Matt Smith. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, that's all right. Matt Smith. I keep having this. Okay, here's a weird thing that I go through with Doctor Who. I have never seen Doctor Who. I don't care about Doctor Who. I'm sure people who love it, I'm sure it's great, you know. But
to now, our listeners, Chris's opinions do not reflect the opinion of, no, I'm kidding,
the nerd society. Again, I have nothing against it. I did not, when we were kids growing up, it was just this weird guy in a scarf, and I did not get it, and I wanted nothing to do with it. And so I had no connection to Matt Smith. And and then who's the other guy who was the Doctor Who?
David Tennant.
Yes, David Tennant. So I know everybody loved them in that role as sort of the hero. And every time I've seen David Tennant or Matt Smith in anything, they play just total awful sons of bitches. Yeah. And I feel like I hate these guys, particularly in this movie. And I don't mean that I hate Matt Smith as an actor. He made you want to hate him in this movie, which is exactly what he was there for. But God, every time I see him or David Tennant, I'm just like, you two assholes are bugging me.
You are so mean to Kristen Ritter.
But yeah, Matt Smith, I mean, he plays the part really well in this. He's cool, but creepy. I don't know what else to say about him. He's got such an odd look. He's got a long head.
Mo and I have been watching The Queen.
Okay. Oh, is he in there?
Yeah, the first two seasons, he plays Prince Philip.
Oh, okay.
And he's kind of like in this. He's really good. He plays the part really well. And yet when I look at him, I'm like, is he super generic? Like, looking physically, is he super generic looking? Or is he just, like, very unique? I can't figure out how he looks and how I feel about it.
Well, and maybe this is just being British, but it's a little bit like Benedict Cumberbatch, where there are women that just swoon for him. Mm-hmm. But if he wasn't famous and talented and awesome the way that he is, and you just saw him on the bus, you would like pull your kids a little closer. be like, stay away from that frickin' weird looking guy.
None of that was expected.
But it's kind of the same with Matt Smith. I mean, yeah. You could make an argument that he's a handsome fella, and you could make an argument that he looks like a troll.
Yeah.
It's and just
maybe
it's,
that's my thing where I'm very conflicted.
Yeah. He's going to have a big part in they're doing like a prequel series to Game of Thrones.
Oh, that's right.
He's going to play
Targaryens.
Yeah, he's going to play some old Targaryen prince, I think. So, so that'll be fun. I mean, again, he seems to be a great actor. I look forward to hopefully seeing him in something where he doesn't play an asshole sometimes. But so he was great. I loved the kind of what they did. We talked a little bit about the mirrors, and so. When Eloise is in these dream worlds where she's seeing the 60s and you see her in a mirror and then you see Sandy on the other side. And it's basically that they're, like we said, she sort of inhabits her or sees the world through her eyes. And they do a lot of great stuff with that. I don't think he gets hung up on it the way that you could in like, There could have been so much of them putting a hand up together and showing that, oh, we are a reflection of each other.
Right.
So it's their movements don't always sync with each other. And I think that was done maybe purposefully, that it was, you know, it could have been a little too kitschy to do it that way. But you get a sense of exactly what you need to know about this, that she's seeing the world through her eyes. And then there are times in it, like I said, where they switch. Where they'll be walking down like a staircase and all of a sudden you see Sandy in the mirror and Eloise is there in real life. And there's a great sequence where they're dancing with Jack, who's played by Matt Smith, and he'll spin one of them past the camera and then the other one is there dancing. And it's just seamless the way it's done. Yeah. I still don't quite get how they put it all together, but it's great to watch.
And a lot of those, the dancing and then walking past the mirrors, are extended takes. It's not like
right.
quick cuts where it's like, okay, mirror each other's movements for 5 seconds.
Right.
They didn't Michael Bay it. And there's even a moment, it's been a little while since I watched it, but I think Anya Taylor-Joy is like walking down some stairs. and it's not like this big long mirror, but there's just these little like columns, I think, with mirrors, mm-hmm. and you don't even think about it. And I had to rewind it, and I was like, every time she passes, yep, there's the other actress.
Yeah.
There's the other actress. It's just these split second things. And then you and I had talked before. The coat check guy is one of the Weasley twins who's,
yes.
I don't know what the actor's name is, but I was like, this is so weird. Why did they choose him? I thought he was going to play a bigger part. And then once I saw what they were doing at the mirrors, I was like, oh, they just used two twins to walk right alongside each other.
And it's funny because that was the only part that you see them in.
Yeah.
Being who they were, I mean, you could have pulled any twins from Britain to throw in there and been fine. So I was surprised when they showed up there and then you never saw them again. I thought, oh, I wonder why they didn't use them more. But
I mean, there's the one moment where he says, hey, you should come to our candy store. I guess it's not candy, it's tricks.
I'm with that you. Joke up. I'm with you. That was a solid attempt at a Harry Potter joke. Good job. So let's talk about the like we said, it was a mystery and there's sort of a twist in the end. Did you see the twist coming? At least, I mean, I guess there's a couple of twists. One that involves Terrence Stamp and who he is.
I love a good Terrence Stamp twist. I kind of saw that coming.
Okay.
That just seemed where it was just like, he's this creepy guy. I was like, well, obviously he's not going to turn out to be the creepy guy. He's not Matt Smith, which is kind of what they set it up as being, oh, he's Matt Smith, but in the future.
Yeah.
And so I kind of figured that he wasn't who he seemed to be. I did not expect him to get hit by a car and killed.
Yeah.
That was a surprise, but what about you?
That one had me, I had kind of that same feeling. And then they did a good job with the Diana Rigg reveal, because I thought from the beginning that she was going to end up being Sandy. And then halfway through the movie, you are led to believe that Sandy was murdered.
Yeah.
And then that threw me off. And so by the end, I was back to being confused. And I still like that it was a good mind game that they played with me there. But so I kind of half had it and then lost it and then was surprised in the end. So that was a fun series of events for me. I like it when a movie can pull the wool over my eyes like that.
Yeah. Even when you think like, oh, I got this figured out. And then it makes you rethink it. And then it goes back to it. Like, it doesn't seem like you were one step ahead in the movie, because you do eventually go, oh no, I was wrong. Diana Rigg ends up being her. Okay. So this is where, and I think this is kind of what you were referencing earlier.
Yeah.
Where the theme almost kind of becomes a Me Too thing.
Right.
Where Sandy is Anya Taylor-Joy. Is that right?
Yes.
Enters this world and thinks she's going to be this big glamorous singer and ends up kind of being pimped out by Matt Smith, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Essentially to these gross old men.
Yeah. Which kind of shitty.
just a little.
And then you're led to believe that she's murdered, and then it's almost like Eloise is trying to figure out this mystery and kind of bring some sort of justice to what happened to her by.
Right.
And that's kind of the Terrence Stamp thing. But then in the end, it turns out that Sandy killed Jack, right?
She killed Jack, and then she killed all of the gross old men that she was forced to be pimped out to.
Eloise starts having these visions of their spirits kind of coming after her.
Exactly. And that's sort of the sixth sense part of it to me, is that she's running from what are sort of these malevolent spirits all through the movie, only to find out that they're asking her for help.
Yeah.
In the end, that they can't rest because they've been murdered and they want to see their murderer brought to justice. And again, it's a fun twist, and it's different than what you would think. But especially in the Me Too era, and kind of where, like, again, I can never fault a movie for going a different direction than I thought it would, especially if it's something interesting. But it really felt like it let down that character Sandy. It was like,
yeah,
you had this horrible life, and you were abused, and you were forced into prostitution, and we see that your life wasn't as glamorous as we thought it was, but then she still becomes the villain of the story.
And they pay some lip service to it.
Yeah.
The end, in terms of, like, I understand why you did what you did. Like, all these guys, and I don't think the movie leads you to think, like, oh, these guys were innocent and they didn't deserve this. Like, you kind of do feel like, yeah, you guys were scumbags, and
yeah,
I'm glad Diana Rigg murdered you. But it does, it vilifies her to a certain extent, and that felt not cheap, but it just,
there's something off about it.
It undercuts some of what they were setting up, I think.
Yeah. And again, that's why when we talked last week about movies that pay homage to a time, that's what I really thought this movie was going to be, just about how much he loved the 60s and sort of things that happened. And in the end, it's almost becomes a grass is always greener on the other side tale, where it's almost a critique of Eloise looking to the past and wishing that she was there, and then finding out that it was really awful. So in the end, I couldn't really tell how he felt about this London in the 60s, but and like I said, I don't know that he was really trying to say anything with it. I think it was just sort of a story, and it was fun, and that's what it was. I don't think that he had necessarily a purpose in saying it, because if there's a message here, I don't know what it was. I don't know. Don't be pimped out because you'll be a crazed murderer. I'm not sure. I don't know. I wish that ending was, I don't even want to say better. I don't want to say different, because it was good, and it's entertaining, and the movie's great. And even in the end, I enjoyed the way, for what they did with it. I think that he manages it all very well. But it did leave me a little sour to have her turned into the villain, where she was. I didn't want to see her be a victim, because Sandy was a very strong character, but it just didn't sit right with me.
It's not even necessarily that she's the villain, because even by the end of it, after this woman has murdered several men, you still feel for her.
Yeah.
But it's almost like I wish there was more of a sit down between Eloise and Diana Rigg, in terms of like just the pain that she went through.
Yeah.
And horrible things that she had, and the understanding of, and I think they do cover that, but it's so quick that I wish there would have been a longer scene about it, or maybe a cut back to a scene where Eloise and Sandy are both in the 60s.
Yeah.
And they actually had that might have been interesting, the younger version of Sandy kind of sitting down and talking about what had happened, and understanding that, I shouldn't have done this, but this is where my head was with all of this.
And again, so here's another callback to The Sixth Sense. And I think The Sixth Sense is a masterpiece, and obviously I can't point to almost anything else that M. Night Shyamalan did after that lives up to it, in the same way that Edgar Wright has every movie I love. So I don't want to say that M. Night Shyamalan is a better filmmaker than Edgar Wright, but basically Edgar Wright got to that point at the end of this movie that is the same point that The Sixth Sense was about to end. And The Sixth Sense took it in such a calm way. It was about the characters. It was about Haley Joel Osment learning what it meant for him to help these spirits and what that meant for everybody. And in Last Night in Soho, Edgar Wright almost fell victim to the idea of now we need to have a big action scene at the end.
Yeah.
Where, and again, it's entertaining and it's interesting. And the way that he handles it is as good as you could handle what he's doing with it. But you're right. If they had taken it a different direction and said, let's have them hash this out. And maybe even if Diana Rigg paid for her sins in the end, if she did murder a bunch of people, no matter what they were, there could have been a way. I mean, it could have been turning her over to the authorities, or maybe she dies in a different way or something like that. But to have it be this scene where she's chasing Eloise through the house trying to kill her, I didn't make sense to me.
And maybe that's what it was, is that it's not just that she went after these scumbags. Mm-hmm. It's that now she's trying to kill the young girl who's tried to identify with her and help her.
Yeah.
That
just
becomes problematic.
Yeah. So. But yeah, again, I don't want to. I sound like a broken record defending it and saying it's still really good, because it is. It's a choice that I wouldn't have made. But had anybody else made that choice in making this movie, I don't think it could have worked as well. But somehow Edgar Wright still makes it charming and interesting, and you still get the emotional impact of it. And everybody sort of ends up where they need to. But I don't know. It was great.
The music's great.
Music's great. A lot of needle drops in this movie.
I've Got My Mind Set on You, which I thought was George Harrison originally.
Uh-huh.
They play a version in this that I looked it up and is actually the original version.
Okay.
It's pretty great.
There was another song like that. Maybe that was the one, but I think there was another song in this that I was... Oh, is it... It's something from the 80s. Was it Tears for Fears? What? I don't know. There was, I feel like an idiot not remembering. But there's another song in this that you hear the original version. I didn't even know that there was another version. Like, somebody had did it in the 80s, and that's what everybody knows. So, I don't know. If you watch the movie, listen for it and let me know what it was, because I can't remember. But.
Can I give him your cell phone?
Yeah. Okay. Text me late at night. Send a picture.
But yeah.
Okay.
I definitely recommend watching it. You might not love it, but there's so much stuff in it that's great that it's worth checking out.
Yeah. I mean, until he does something that completely goes off the rails, I would say if Edgar Wright's name is on it, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's a good one. All right. I guess we're going to wrap it up. So, Rob, if anybody's looking for us online, where can they do it?
We are on Facebook, where you can like us. We're on Twitter at Two Geeks Movies. And you can find us in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Podomatic.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you all for listening, and we will catch you next time on Two Geeks at the Movies.
Bye, folks.
Bye.